Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
We are here today because the Supreme Court is playing out of bounds of the ethics rules for federal judges.
Last week, Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse spoke at a hearing on Supreme Court ethics reform. It was about a slew of revelations that several Supreme Court justices did not disclose their potential conflicts of interest.
The court has conclusively proven that it cannot police itself.
Justices are supposed to basically do what Senator Whitehouse said, police themselves. And this includes saying whether they've taken any money or gifts from people that might compromise them. Justices Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, and Chief Justice John Roberts have all recently been the subjects of media reports and controversies.
I don't think all of these stories are created equal. I think that some are more dire for the court or more serious for the court to deal with than some others. And some point out not so much what the justice has done wrong, but maybe that the disclosure laws are not strict enough or specific enough for what people want to know about their public officials.
That's Bob Barnes. He covers the Supreme Court for The Post. And Bob says that while these stories have varying degrees of seriousness, they all point to a much larger question.
It's what do we as citizens expect of public officials, not just on the Supreme Court, but in Congress, in the White House, in the executive branch, where you do have lots of access to powerful people. What kind of disclosure do we want to get from those people so that we can make up our own decisions about how they conduct themselves in office?
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Anahad O'Connor. It's Thursday, May 11th. Today, we dig into the details of these conflict of interest issues, and we address the question on everyone's mind, can the Supreme Court actually police itself? So let's unpack these conflict of interest issues facing the Supreme Court. There have been revelations about Justices Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, and Chief Justice John Roberts. First, let's start with the one that's gotten the most attention, and by all accounts, what appears to be the most significant, and that's Justice Thomas. Can you walk me through where this began?
Well, it began with his friendship with a man named Harlan Crow.
Now to this, ProPublica, out with new reporting this morning on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Thomas having received luxury trips, real estate deals, and gifts from billionaire Harlan Crow,
who is a donor to the GOP and to other conservative causes, and is a Texas billionaire. He and his wife seem to be very close friends of the Thomases, they say, for more than 25 years, so that would be after Clarence Thomas became a justice on the Supreme Court. They travel together.
Private jet flights, luxury yacht cruises.
And the travel detailed by the organization ProPublica has really been eye-opening.
Lavish getaways to Indonesia, New Zealand.
You know, really sort of luxury stuff.
A posh lakeside resort in the remote Adirondack Mountains there in New York.
That's one a little at odds with the way Justice Thomas often presents himself as sort of the commoner on the Supreme Court, but also just kind of eye-opening for anyone because very few people have access to such travel and vacations.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen interviews where Justice Thomas says that he sort of eschews, you know, beaches and fancy vacations and prefers staying in an RV in a Walmart parking lot.
That's right. He has often talked about his travels around the country in an RV with his wife, Jenny. This is very much at odds with that portrayal.
Yeah, pretty much the complete opposite of that portrayal. So how does he explain all of this?
Well, he says that they're close personal friends and that he has not disclosed these trips on his financial disclosure because he was told early on by some of his colleagues that he consulted with that it falls under an exception for personal hospitality. That is, that public officials don't have to detail everything that they do with friends. I think anyone would think that this is kind of a surprising amount of personal hospitality. But that's what the justice says. One of the groups that sort of provides guidance for what judges should report in the last few months said that they need to report private jet travel. Some would argue that it was always reportable. These new regulations make it clear that it is. And Justice Thomas says he will abide with that in the future.
Right. And since then, there's been other reporting that's come out as well about the extent of this friendship between Harlan Crow and Justice Thomas.
That's right. Yeah, there have been other reports. One that Harlan Crow bought Justice Thomas's mother's home in Savannah, Georgia, with the idea that in some point in the future, it would become a museum about the justice. But the justice's mother continues to live there. There have been reports that he, again by ProPublica, that he paid for private tuition for Thomas's grandnephew, which wasn't reported.
And the Washington Post had some exclusive reporting just last week about some additional questions or conflicts of interest surrounding the Thomases. Can you talk about this?
Part of the reason that things have been so controversial with Justice Thomas is because of his wife, Virginia Jenny Thomas, who is a longtime conservative activist. She was before the two of them married. She says that they keep her political life and his judicial life separate, but they also, call each other their best friends. And it seems like all of us in a marriage would talk about things at home. The reporting that the Post did said that a group that was controlled by Leonard Leo, he was part of this nonprofit, told Kellyanne Conway, who was a pollster, to send a bill to the group and that it would be money for Jenny Thomas for consulting services that she had done. But he said specifically, Jenny's name shouldn't be on this, and which seems like an effort to cover up the fact that there was this connection. Leonard Leo said in a statement to the Post that that's because people are always trying to use things to embarrass the Thomases and invade their privacy, and so he didn't want to contribute to that. But it's very unclear how anyone would have seen these business records if they had Virginia Thomas's name on it. So the explanation didn't quite seem to fit.
Right. I think for the average person, it's hard not to listen to all this and, you know, think that some, you know, potential ethical boundaries have been crossed. And I know that Democrats in Congress and in the Senate have, you know, sort of been outraged by this. What has the response been like from Republicans?
Well, Republicans have been very protective of Justice Thomas.
The Supreme Court and the court system is a whole separate part of our Constitution. And the Democrats, it seems to me, spend a lot of time criticizing individual members of the court and going after the court as an institution.
They said that maybe there were some things he should have reported, but the law wasn't particularly clear. They have said that he is going to make amendments to this financial disclosure, although Thomas himself has not said that. They think that this is an attempt to delegitimize the court now that it has a strong conservative majority, and that the decisions that the court has done in the last couple of years, especially overturning the guarantee of abortion and Roe v. Wade, that all of this is an attempt by liberals, and they say their allies in the news media, to delegitimize the court, to make it seem as if the court is a political body and one that shouldn't be respected.
And now, what do legal scholars have to say about all this?
As you might imagine, it's mixed. Some think that that there were sort of clear guidelines that were violated here. Others think that it goes to a bigger problem about the Supreme Court, which is that the disclosure laws leave a lot to be desired. I mean, remember, the whole point of disclosure laws is so that the public has a chance to see what kind of favors or gifts or income that the justice or the judge has received, so that they can make up their mind about conflicts of interest. And I think that almost anyone would say that this isn't particularly rigorous, or at least that it couldn't be tightened and made easier for the public to see. For one thing, you know, the justices don't report their financial gifts or income for basically a year after it happened. So, you know, they will just be filing their 2022 financial disclosures next month, in June of 23. So it's very hard to tell in real time what a justice is doing, where income might be coming from, whether the justice has a conflict. And so that's one way in which, you know, the financial disclosure doesn't seem to work particularly well.
Let's move on to Justices Gorsuch and Roberts. Why are they being implicated in this news about Supreme Court justices having conflicts of interest? Let's start with Gorsuch.
Well, Justice Gorsuch sold some land in Colorado. He owned it along with other people. They put the land up for sale on the market. It was bought by the head of a law firm that occasionally has cases before the Supreme Court. And on his disclosure, he disclosed selling the land and the money that he got from that sale, but not who the buyer was. It's very unclear, I think, that he needed to do that, that it was required of him to put down who the buyer was. But that raises the question of, should he have been? Do we want to know who is making these kind of purchases from a justice? And so that's, I think, a case of not really whether Justice Gorsuch did what he was supposed to under the law, mm-hmm. but does the law go far enough in making some requirements?
And now, what about the Chief Justice, Justice Roberts?
The Chief Justice's wife, Jane Roberts, is a lawyer. She was a partner at a law firm when he joined the Supreme Court. She changed her law practice because she thought that there would be conflicts or could be conflicts between some of the work she did and some of the mm-hmm. work that came before the Supreme Court. And she became a headhunter, basically, for law firms, where she tries to sort of arrange lawyers who want to leave one firm and go to another firm. She helps arrange those deals. She makes a commission because of it. Again, the Chief Justice has always disclosed that she gets income from this practice and names her employer. But, you know, it's not required that you name all of your spouse's clients. So the question there is, you don't really know who Jane Roberts is representing or who she is putting together with another law firm. And, you know, these disclosure laws do not call for the amount of money that the spouse makes, only that they are employed and who the employer is.
For both of these situations, critics are saying that Roberts and Gorsuch should have more fully disclosed these financial dealings, which leads me to wonder, what exactly are the disclosure or conflict of interest requirements that the justices are supposed to follow?
In general, they're supposed to report income, stock ownership, where does their money come from, basically. The justices are allowed to earn some outside income. It's usually from teaching at a law school. And sometimes those turn into fairly cushy summer programs in a very nice place like Italy, in which the justice will teach a course. It is restricted to a certain percentage of the justice's salary. Can't go beyond that. If it goes beyond that, or if they receive more money for speaking, they need to donate it to charity or do something else with it. There is an exception for books. If a justice writes a book, they are entitled to the money that they make from that book. And that has been the most lucrative form of outside income for the justices. Justice Sotomayor has made, I think, more than $3 million mm-hmm. on the books that she has written. She wrote a very popular autobiography, and she has written children's books and books for young adults. Justice Thomas wrote an autobiography, and both of those autobiographies were well received and sold very well.
These conflicts of interest have raised so many questions, but have we seen any impact, or how does this matter for the actual cases before the court?
Well, if we wanted to take Justice Thomas as an example, for instance, he says that Harlan Crowe doesn't have any business before the court and that he would recuse himself if he did. But, it raises questions, especially Jenny Thomas and her conservative activism. She's very outspoken about issues that come before the court, such as Obamacare. And with this last election, she was very much among those who thought that there were problems with the election. She urged the White House in emails and text messages not to give up the fight, not to give in, not to concede.
The text messages from Jenny Thomas, obtained by the January 6th Select Committee. In one, Thomas writing, quote, "Help this great president stand firm, Mark. Biden and the left is attempting the greatest heist of our history."
At the same time that Justice Thomas and the rest of the court were hearing cases involving that. Now, the court didn't take up those cases. President Trump really struck out in trying to get the Supreme Court to intervene in the election. But there was also a case in which the question was about documents and whether certain documents should be turned over to the January 6th committee. Justice Thomas was the only member of the court who said that he would have granted Trump's request to withhold those documents from the January 6th committee. And after it became apparent of Jenny Thomas's role in the election, there were many who said that Justice Thomas should have recused himself from that case and not taken part in it.
So, Bob, it sounds like there are actually some rules that the justices have to follow, but who's actually enforcing these rules?
Well, there is a committee of judges that looks at the financial disclosures and supposedly tells the justices when they think that they're incomplete. So some of the requests from Congress for an investigation that they have sent to the Chief Justice has referred that to this committee. and we haven't really received anything. But remember, not just Supreme Court justices, but all federal judges are appointed for life, or as the Constitution says, for good behavior, meaning that the only way to really do anything about them is to impeach them, which is very difficult and happens very, very rarely. And so it is more of, you know, counting on the judges and the justices to do it on their own.
After the break, we tackle what it would take for the nation's highest court to clean up its thorny ethical issues. We'll be right back.
In-laws, love them or hate them, you're pretty much stuck with them. And when you're a ruler in the Middle Ages, that can be a serious problem. It might even land you dead. I'm Dan Jones, and on season 4 of This Is History, I'm telling the story of England's weirdest king, Henry III. He's in way over his head, and he's surrounded by bloodthirsty relatives with their eyes on his throne. To listen, search This Is History and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, Bob, it sounds like in response to all of this controversy, the Thomas issue in particular, there are now some new financial disclosure requirements that went into effect in March. Can you talk about those changes? What's going to happen here?
Well, those were basically the ones about private jet travel and a few other sort of, if not changes to the rules. It's sort of debated whether or not there was always something that should be reportable. The committee made it clear that they are reportable now. And so that will be a change when we see the next financial disclosures, I guess, although that may not be for a while. But those are, you know, fairly modest things. You know, what the Congress wants the Supreme Court to do is to come up with its own very specific code of ethics. They say it's the only court that doesn't have one, and that is true. And the justices have for years been trying to come up with one. And they say that it is difficult. They say that their court is unlike any of the lower courts. And that there are some very tough issues that they haven't figured out yet. They say they comply with and consult lots of other ethical guidelines and with each other, and that it's not necessary. But, it seems clear that this sort of trust me attitude that the justices have is not going over very well, especially with Congress and I would say with the public too.
Now, Bob, you mentioned earlier, you brought up the word impeachment. That leads me to wonder, what are the ramifications for justices who break the rules? Can Congress kick them out? Can they be impeached? How would that actually work?
They can be impeached just as the president can be impeached, but we've seen how difficult that can be, right?
That's putting it lightly.
I don't think there's a lot of appetite to do that. As we talked about, there's a very partisan divide here on this issue in Congress.
Mm. And now, speaking of Congress, Congress actually tried to at least hold a hearing about all of this, right? Did anything come out of that?
The Senate Judiciary Committee asked Chief Justice Roberts to come and speak to them. He declined. He politely said. And he said that basically, the head of one branch of government doesn't go very easily to another branch of government to testify. And the Chief Justice is very protective of the federal judiciary. He's not the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will be quick to remind you he is the Chief Justice of the United States, meaning that he represents all of the federal judiciary. And he said that it's a separation of powers problem for him to come and testify. Now, you know, you could certainly debate that, but that's what he says. And instead of coming to the hearing, he sent over a document that was signed by all nine of the justices that talk about the various laws and canons and guidelines that they say that they comply with when they think about conflicts of interest and ethical behavior. But it was basically a recycled document, something that the court has always said it had done. There was nothing new in it, and it did not satisfy anyone, really.
It makes me wonder, you know, with all this controversy, what do legal scholars or experts suggest as possible solutions? What are some of the suggestions they have? Are there ideas for remaking the rules for justices, or are there smaller practical fixes that could be implemented?
You know, the two things that you hear the most about are expanding the court or limiting the terms of the justices. It would be easy, not easy, but it would certainly be within Congress's power to change the number of justices on the Supreme Court. That has happened throughout history. It's gotten a little bigger. It's gotten a little smaller. It's been nine for more than a century. But, you know, you get into that and it's like, okay, if the Democrats, when they have control of government, expand the number of justices on the Supreme Court, then when Republicans have control, they will do it too, so that they can appoint more members. It is a serious topic that people talk about a lot, but I think it would be impossible to do in this era of a divided Congress like we have now. And changing the terms of the justices, there is a lot of interest in that. It seems very popular. One idea would be that they would serve for 18 years, which would, in once it was fully operational, would mean that every president would get to appoint or nominate a Supreme Court justice rather than the system we have now, which is sort of, it all depends.
Yeah, that would be a remarkable change.
But that would seem, by some at least, think that that would require a constitutional amendment. Not all think that, but I think a lot do. And those are extremely difficult to make happen. I think every one of the justices would tell you that the court's reputation is incredibly important. You know, the court doesn't have any way to enforce its decisions except that the other branches of government accept them and the people accept them. And so if the court loses that legitimacy, if it loses that respect, then it could lose its ability to have its opinions obeyed.
Bob, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Bob Barnes covers the Supreme Court for The Post. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. This episode was produced by Ariel Plotnick and edited by Rena Flores. It was mixed by Sean Carter. And for our listeners, I have a request. We're doing an episode on loneliness and the profound public health threat it poses. We want to hear from you. If you have a personal story that you want to share, send a voice memo to postreports@washpost.com with your name and your story. I'm Anahat O'Connor. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.